Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And good afternoon, everybody. And welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your humble host, Kel Fritzy. For my Canadian friends, happy Thanksgiving. Today's Thanksgiving Day in Canada. Gobble, gobble. Hope you're all having a good time. Beautiful long weekend, weather-wise. And today's, you get to be part of a historic event at 4:30 this afternoon. So stick around for that. We have a lot to get through today. You see, Islam is the gift that keeps on giving. Well, you know what? I don't really enjoy their gifts. But Islam, it just never gets it a rest, eh? It never stops. I've got a few things here for you that I'm going to share with you. One I'm really looking forward to is Tim Burton, who will be joining me today. I am so excited, Tim Burton being here. He is such a busy man. However, he is a true infidel. He has faith in the Red Fox Blogger. He is the erudite voice across the pond. And Tim has something he's going to share with you a little later. So just sit back and relax and grab your cup of tea and enjoy that. I also have an article here by Mike Holt of Restore Australia that I want to relate to you. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I have it in my chat room. Well, I'll put it in my chat room, but I have it on my blog, and that's redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. You can go and check it out there. I also have Tim Burton's wonderful article on Muhammad at redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. I think I'm going to start calling myself Red Fox Blogger. Everybody else does. I seem to be. You know what I mean. But this article by Mike Holt from Restore Australia. Now, you know him. He was my guest here a couple of weeks ago. He is a federal politician in Australia, and he started the Stop the Halal sticker campaign. He wrote this article. It's called Words Can Kill. And how many times have we been told by well-meaning people not to say that we are against Muslims? No, we must always say that we are against Islam. Yeah, how many times have we heard that? A lot of times, right? Well, Mike Holt, he's sorry, but he's not doing that anymore because words have meaning. And if we try to use words to be nice to our enemies or to excuse them for believing in the very thing we are against, then we are just deluding ourselves. The fact is, all Muslims believe in the same God, which is Allah, the same book, which is the Quran, and they are all bound by Sharia. Words can be powerful weapons when used correctly. And if we are going to resist the constant jihadic war that Islam keeps targeting us with, we need to understand the words they use. Unless we do, we cannot know how to fight back, and more importantly, how to win. Is Islam racist? We often hear Muslims and their demi-socialist buddies accusing those of who oppose Islam of being racist. But as usual, they are lying. We know that. Remember that Muslims are allowed to lie by the Quran, and we know that as taqiyya. If it helps further the spread of Islam, we need to understand how Muslims think before we understand why they are waging jihad against us. The Quran tells Muslims that lying is haram or forbidden. However, the Quran also says that a Muslim may lie if it will help spread Islam. Like I say, taqiyya. Now, Islam is racist to its core. Read the Quran and the Hadith. There are more than 100 verses which are referred to as surah. In the Quran alone, they command all Muslims to kill infidels and Jews. If you don't believe me, Google. Commands to kill the infidel in the Quran. Commanding Muslims to kill infidels and Jews is racism in my book. How about in your book? There's a lot of people out there. We're all familiar with those catchphrases. The most familiar, I think, would be the war on terror. Is there a war on terror? I'm going off script here for a sec. Is there a war on terror? No. No, there is no war on terror. The war is terror. It's hard for me to wrap my head around the war on terror phrase because we didn't go out of our way to declare war. Terror and Islam declared war on us. So Islam is at war with us. We're not on it. We didn't ask for this war. We did not invite it, nor do we want anything to do with it. However, because of the threat of Islam, they have thrown down the gauntlet, and we have picked it up. We will fight back, but the war on terror, no, doesn't exist. War with Islam, yes, we are at war with Islam. As far as I'm concerned, if you follow Islam, if you are an adherent to Islam, then I'm at war with you. You're at war with me. I don't want to be at war with you, but you decided that you wanted to be at war with me. So that's it. I'm not pussyfooting around that anymore. Islam has declared jihad on us. In various imams, they have said it many times. War for us Westerners is any conflict involving weapons and killing between opposing groups or nations, okay? I didn't go to the Middle East and declare war on them. No, they came over here and they declared war on us. We may be at war, but it's not on Islam or terror. My apologies. It's not a war on terror. It's a war with Islam. Is there a difference between war and jihad? Yes. When Muslims talk about jihad, they are actually saying much more than most of us understand, depending on the context in which it is used. Most modern dictionaries define jihad as a holy war undertaken by Muslims against non-believers. That is a very poor definition. It is much more than that. But before we try to understand what it is, we need to understand what it is not. Jihad is not killing innocent people. Jihad is not flying a plane into a building packed with civilians, because suicide is haram in Islam, unless it helps further the spread of Islam. Jihad is not fighting out of anger and hatred. Muslims believe they are doing you a favor by fighting you to bring Islam into your heart. Jihad is not killing others just because they don't agree with you. Jihad is not killing others just because they are not Muslims. The real definition of jihad, it must be understood in this context. Jihad is an Arabic word for the root jihada. It literally means to struggle or strive. Jihad is struggling or striving for the sake of Allah. Jihad takes a very important status in the doctrine of Islam and is one of the basic duties for every Muslim, and we must remember this. Jihad takes many forms. Jihad is the heart and soul. Jihad by the tongue. Jihad by the pen. Scrolling my page here. Jihad by the hand. Jihad by the sword. So what exactly is it when they declare jihad? Well, see, that is the soulful jihad. That is the inner struggle. That soulful inner struggle for ultimate holiness. It's a constant strivation for improvement. It does not include killing innocent people, nor flying planes into buildings. But there is something else out there. It's called kinetic jihad. And that is what is killing us. I was talking with Mike a little while back about some of this. One thing I really took away from this article, too, is his unwillingness to capitalize words like Muslim, Quran, or Imam, because he feels it gives them a modicum of respect, and he cannot and does not respect Islam or those who follow it, because Islam is a religion of death, and Mike Holt, he treasures life. I kind of picked that up. I like it. Why capitalize anything to do with the evil cult? It does. It does seem to... It's too respectful. Yeah. I like, you know, I never really thought about that. Capitalizing Muslims, the Quran, imams. Yeah, it does seem to be respectful when you do that. So I like that. I'm going to follow suit. But Tim Burton is here, and I'm going to bring him on the air. I'm going to let him have a spin at this if he likes.
Hi there, Kel. How are you doing?
Hello, Tim. How are you today?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good. Just listening to your discussion of Mike Holt's article. I've been following it as you've been speaking on the restoreaustralia.org.au website.
Fantastic.
So if any of your listeners are just wondering where it is, there is a link down the right-hand side of Kel's blog page, or you can go straight to restoreaustralia.org.au and find the article. It's entitled Words Can Kill, but it's also listed under the subject of Words as Weapons. So if anybody was looking for Words Can Kill and they only came across Words as Weapons, it's one and the same. So I just thought I'd mention that to Kel, because that's just the way it's listed on the site. I mean, it's easy enough to find. But yeah, Mike Holt's got a very, very good take on that. I certainly believe that anybody who voluntarily subscribes to that particular ideology, the cult of death that I sometimes like to call it, if they voluntarily subscribe to it once they've had it fully explained to them, then they're missing part of their humanity, is all I can say. But then I suppose that's rather a redundant phrase, because one of the things that you find when somebody has been brainwashed with Islam from an early age is they do, during that process, surrender part of their humanity. And it's a very sad consequence of being brainwashed with Islam, but you see it all the time. The number of times that eyewitnesses have said, when they've been in the middle of a terror attack and were lucky enough to come out at the other end, and they've said they've looked into the eyes of the person that was carrying out the attack on behalf of Islam, shouting Allah Akbar while they do it, and there just seems to be no humanity in their eyes. And that's a phrase that I've seen over and over again. I hope I'm never unlucky to have to experience it firsthand, but nevertheless, I think it's a realistic a way of describing somebody who has had the misfortune, and there's 20% of them in the world have had the misfortune of being brainwashed with Islam from an early age. But of course, once you've had it fully explained to you, if you still subscribe to it and you can't summon up the moral courage or the ability, for whatever reason, to leave, then yeah, you have to treat that person separately, and there's no point treating them with respect or giving them the same privileges that you would allocate to any other human being that lives in the civilized world today, because their mental processes are mm-hmm. damaged to such an extent that they cannot fully identify and take part in the process that we call civilization. It's just not possible for them to do it, and it's only when they can bring themselves to leave Islam behind that you can then say, well, that person is now at least on the road to recovery, and you can start offering them support. But what we're doing is we're giving them every possible chance when they come over and live amongst us. We understand or the very first thing that we saw when they came over to our Western societies, I'm thinking of the UK in particular, but I'm sure the same is true in Canada and America, that they don't assimilate and don't integrate. And probably for 15, 20 years, our governments were saying, well, that's our fault because we're so racist towards them that they can't integrate and assimilate because we don't give them the chance. Well, 15 or 20 years down the line, we have given just about every chance that anybody could possibly want to assimilate and integrate. And to be fair, a percentage, I wouldn't like to put a figure on it, a percentage of them do assimilate and integrate. So for all intents and purposes, they're productive members of our society. But they are still subservient to the ideology that can make them turn on a dime and attack us when the moment is right. And you must never forget that.
That's exactly it, is that they are subservient to this entity, this cultish political system called Islam. So I do not understand now how I can have any sympathy for Muslims when they follow the Quran and they know what's in that Quran. I'm sick of the taqiyya, lies. Oh, you don't understand the Quran. You don't understand what's in it. You don't understand Arabic. That's always a tired one. And I think, see, Muslims are figuring out that we're wising up to them rather handily. They can no longer hide behind you do not understand the Quran because you do not speak Arabic. Oh, for goodness sake, you know, there is so much information out there. We have people who have dedicated their lives as scholars who study and relate and teach Islam. There's no reason for us not to understand what the Quran is, what's within it, the contents, and there's no reason for anybody not to know the intentions when it, in terms of caliphate, for example. There's no reason for us not to understand Islam. So I think it's time to, you know, just tell the Muslims to knock it off and do something.
Yeah.
If they want, knock it off and get a life.
Sorry, Kel, you were saying.
No, go right ahead. I'm sputtering now.
Well, all I was going to say was, when you use the words Islamic scholar, it's important to differentiate between those Muslims who self-describe as Islamic scholars.
No, I meant infidel scholars, I suppose.
I knew that's what you meant, but oftentimes what you hear is that a Muslim is self-described, or other Muslims will describe him as an Islamic scholar. And then what happens is, like you see, like we saw with... I'm trying to think of a specific example. It'll come to me shortly. But the people you find in the media and on the left, they will speak in hushed and reverent terms if somebody is presented to them as an Islamic scholar. And all it means is that they've memorized some of the Islamic texts, and they know enough to parrot the Islamic party line, as it were. That's all it means to be an Islamic scholar.
Yeah.
When
I was referring to, and I just stepped all over you, Tim, but I want to rush this out before it leaves my little brain.
I know you weren't referring to that kind of scholar, but I'm just saying that It's often what comes to mind when somebody says Islamic scholar. But yeah, you're talking about people like Robert Spencer, who are true scholars of Islam, people who have looked into what Islam really means and have taken the trouble to explain terms that we can all understand. Because before people like Robert Spencer came along, the only other people who were studying Islam but who were not Muslims were doing it from a very Islam sympathetic point of view, with very few exceptions. I mean, there were a couple of notable people, obviously, Thomas Jefferson and so on, who did have the measure of Islam. Who get quoted from time to time, but when you look at contemporary figures who have studied Islam before Robert Spencer came along, they were by and large mostly very sympathetic about it and explained Islam in terms that Muslims would approve of. And of course, when Robert Spencer actually started telling the truth about Islam, he was roundly condemned by all and sundry. Not by me, I hasten to add. He was one of my heroes going as far back as 2001, when I first started to become interested in Islam and its consequences for the Western world. But nevertheless, prior to that, I think you'd be hard put to find somebody who would stand up and say the truth about Islam and risk incurring the wrath of Muslims. But because of people like Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller and so on, we have come to realize a lot more about the truth of Islam. And now people like us are going out and spreading the word to other people. And it's becoming far more acceptable to tell the truth about Islam than it ever before. And that's an unstoppable phenomenon. You can't put that back in the box. I mean, it does get explained in some odd ways. There was somebody, I think it might have been Baroness Worsley, one of our Muslim peers, somebody elevated to the Muslim peerage for goodness knows what. I don't suppose she did it on merit, but that's another story. But she said that Islamophobia now passes the dinner table test, by which she meant that it appeared to be regrettably acceptable for people to discuss the truth about Islam amongst themselves in respectable society, and it never used to be. Now, I happen to think that's a good thing. She represented it in terms which make clear that she didn't think it was a good thing, but it's an unstoppable phenomenon now, and Islamic scholars like Robert Spencer are just what we need.
Another person to... I actually have a soundbite from her, and I'm going to play that in a minute, is Claire Lopez, and she is from the Clarion Foundation in the United States. Former CIA agent, is fluent in Arabic, very much a studied individual when it comes to Islam. I'm going to play a clip from her in a few minutes. Another one that comes to mind, too, is Frank Gaffney. And I don't know if people have had an opportunity to watch his series on YouTube on Islam. If you haven't, please go to YouTube. Just Google Frank Gaffney, YouTube. He'll pop right up. But these are two other individuals of whom I strongly admire, and they come to mind as well.
All right, okay. Frank Gaffney is a name I know, but Claire Lopez, was it? That's not a name I know, and I'm going to have to research it. But Frank Gaffney is one of those names that's come across my radar on a couple of times, but I've never looked at his YouTube videos, so I'm just making a note to do that. Let's see. What is it about those two that you particularly like, Kel?
I think that Claire Lopez is one I admire greatly because she is rather blunt in her approach about educating us about what Islam is and what Islam's intentions are for the West. She is the United States, I'm trying to think with whom I could compare her that would otherwise be a household name for us. But I suppose she's kind of like Pat Condell
I'll definitely like her then.
But she's not bombastic though. I mean, Pat Condell, he can be rather bombastic some days. But not bombastic. But she is very frank, yeah. And she's very direct, and she's very, very honest about what Islam is and her disdain for it. She's not afraid to share how she feels about the issue of Islam and how its encroachment in the United States is really quite devastating. She speaks out against CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, quite often. She does a lot of seminars. CARE is in her radar all the time. As a matter of fact, CARE came out with their love list last month.
Yeah.
And Claire Lopez was featured. She was featured prominently on their website as one of those terrible infidels. Yes. Islamophobes.
Oh,
she made the Islamophobe hit list. Yeah.
Well, if she's a female version of Pat Condell, then I like her already. But I once got labeled as the worst Islamophobe ever by none other than mendacious Mo Ansar. He's touted in this country as a moderate Muslim, and he was last seen with his arms around Tommy Robinson only last week. So how moderate he is, I wouldn't like to say. I was once labelled the worst Islamophobe ever. His very words, Cat Strangler 101 is the worst Islamophobe ever. So I thought, oh, thanks very much for that. But yeah, if you get...
Really?
Yes, really, really, truly. If you get called Islamophobe by somebody like that, that's quite a compliment.
Mm-hmm. You've made the big leagues.
Yeah, well, so it would appear.
My friend Bonnie, a Bare Naked Islam, she also made the CARES infidel Islamophobe hit list this year as well. So, and she's quite proud.
Yeah, that'll be my target for next year, Kel. make care.
Well, there were a lot of people disappointed on why they didn't get on that list, and I care. They're getting emails from infidels saying, "Hey, I'm an infidel too, and I can't stand Islam either. How come I'm not on the list?"
I don't know that I would go to all that trouble, but it'd be nice to, get off the list. Then you know you've hit the big time then when CARE gets you on their list.
I had enough headaches with CARE Chicago following me all over the place on Twitter. I'm not going through that again.
Oh, okay. the other thing I was going to ask you, I mean, that's quite interesting about Claire Lopez, and I'm certainly going to look up and see what I can find about her. What do you think about Frank Gaffney, though? It's a name I know, but I don't really know the person, and I don't really have a feel for what his specialist area is.
He is an American scholar on Islam, and he does a lot of speaking engagements. He engages in a lot of speaking engagements. He's actually the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. He's been a columnist at the Washington Times and Big Peace Town Hall. He's a radio host on Secure Freedom Radio, or I think he's since given that up. But yes, the Center for Security Policy is a huge think tank in the United States, and it does focus on Islam, the threat of Islam, Sharia law. He is one trying to keep it out of the United States of America.
Mm. As you're describing him, for some reason, another name pops into my mind, which is Bill Warner of Political Islam. And I just wondered, only because he runs an organization which is dedicated to advancing knowledge about Islam in the same way that I imagine Frank Gaffney would be. And I just wondered if there was any tie-up between the two. But
I would have to look through his
bio here at the moment, and I think a tie-up between the two is really only in my own mind here. But... Nevertheless, I mean, he sounds like just the sort of person we ought to be taking more notice of, because
absolutely. There's that nasty word again.
Well, absolutely. I wouldn't worry, Kel. It's somewhat endearing over this side of the pond, anyway. When you say absolutely, it just sort of it's like music to my ears, Kel.
Oh, sweet. Frank Gaffney, though, he's hated by the left. He's so outspoken too. As a matter of fact, he appeared in a conservative documentary. It was called Fahrenheit 9/11, mm-hmm. and that was in a rebuttal to Michael Moore's film Fahrenheit 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
He takes the Dimmies to task. He's very bold. He's very outspoken, and he's also one of my Facebook friends.
Oh, well, excellent. I imagine somebody like that's going to have quite a prominent presence on social media, Facebook and Twitter and so on. So I would say to anybody who wants to learn more about the truth about Islam is that we should all be looking at people like this a lot more. I mean, everybody, I imagine, who logs on to your radio show, Kel, they'll all know the names Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller, but they won't necessarily all know the names like Frank Gaffney, Bill Warner, Claire Lopez, and so on. And while they may not be quite as well known as Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller, people like that who've done scholarly research, they have got a lot to offer, and it pays with a subject that's as complicated as Islam to get as wide a perspective from as many people as possible. That's my view. Don't know what you think about that, Kel.
I think that we need to showcase these people more on these type of programs. I'm very, very pleased that I'm introducing you to some of my heroes. Shows like this, I think they do a great service for people to explore further. I always say to my listeners that I am a big voice. I have a loud voice. I have a big mouth, and I use it. However, I am also here to ensure that I give you enough information and encourage the listeners to further research, get on their computers, Google these people, get to YouTube, listen to Frank Gaffney, listen to Claire Lopez, listen to Pat Condell, listen to these people, read what they have to say, educate yourself about Mike Holt of Restore Australia. Just get out there. Go to Freedom Loving Infidel 101 and educate yourself as to who this great person who is with me today, and that is Tim Burton.
You're too kind.
Here, you know what? As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll play that. It's a 2-minute clip that I have of Claire Lopez. I'll play it for you right now. I'll play it for everybody right now. And this is Claire Lopez. She just did a seminar. Thank you to United West. Thank you, Tom Tranto of United West, for downloading this on his YouTube page. But this is Claire Lopez speaking about Islam and why do they hate us. So let me bring that up.
Okay.
It's buffering. Okay.
Now, the objectives of Al-Qaeda are quite simple, and they are two: Islamic governance on earth and enforcement of Sharia, of Islamic law. That's all they want, two things: caliphate and Sharia. That is the black flag of Islam. It's not just the black flag of Al-Qaeda. That is the black flag of Islam, and the words on it are Arabic words. They say in Arabic, La ilaha illallah. Basically, there is no God but Allah. I'm not going to say that three times, and I'm not in front of an imam. Axis of jihad, When people talk about Al-Qaeda, for instance, or the Sunnis, they say no way could they ever work with the other guys. Islam is split. The Sunnis and the Shiites fight. Well, yes, indeed they do. They very happily tear each other apart. And we see it in Iraq, and we see it in Syria, certainly today. Can they ever work together? Absolutely they can work together when it's against the broader enemy, the greater enemy, the kuffar, the non-Muslim, the non-believer. They work together, believe me. That's what 9/11 was all about. Iran working with Al-Qaeda, working with Hezbollah, were behind 9/11. The three of them together worked on 9/11. I have a whole nother presentation on that. Okay, why do they hate us was the question back then. The reason is that as long as any democratic free society exists on earth, the objective of global imposition of Sharia cannot be achieved. So the very existence of a free and democratic society is a threat to their goal. And that is one reason they hate us.
So I thought people would find that interesting. What on earth is that? Something, hey, something happened here. Here we go.
Global. It is very much organized, and again, it's an alliance of nation states, subnational terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda, and also groups that they work with on an ad hoc basis, like organized crime sometimes, and even narco-traffickers. Again, the mission, overthrow all governments that are not Sharia compliant. What is going on across North Africa in the last couple of years? Why were those regimes targeted? Because they were not Sharia compliant. Not because people were dreaming of liberty and democracy. Yes, some were. They absolutely were. I think there were maybe at least five. I'm being facetious, and maybe I shouldn't be, because there are genuinely pro-democratic voices over there, but they are not being heard. And part of the reason is that they are sadly in a minority, a distinct minority.
And that is courtesy of the United West. And that is Tom Trento. And just to remind you, folks, Tom Trento is another person whom you would love to explore. You can listen to Tom Trento at Tom Trento at TrentoVision.com. And you can also listen to his daily program right here on YouTube as well. He tapes his show out of Florida, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen live at TrentoVision.com, or you can catch the archived episode on YouTube as well. So thanks, Tom Trento, for that. And there you go, Tim. That, just to give you a little bit of a flavor as to who, Claire Lopez is.
Yeah, she sounds like a lady who's worth listening to, certainly. Tom Trento, that's another name that has come a long way. I remember when I first started getting interested in Islam, Tom Trento was one of the first people I corresponded with, because I wanted to get involved and I wanted to learn a bit more. And he said, yeah, he says, why don't you come over and visit me? He says, normally I'm in America, I'm going to be in Milan next week, why don't you come and visit? And at the time, I couldn't. I had other commitments and I couldn't do it. But since then, I've followed his career very closely and seen how he's developed in his presentation and his ability to spread awareness of Islam in a way that's understandable to lay people. And that's what all these people, I suppose, if they had one thing in common, it's the ability to take a complex subject and distill it down to concepts that the average man in the street can understand more easily, because it is a huge, big, scary subject when you come across it for the very first time, and the tendency is for a lot of people just to, and it's a very human, natural tendency that people shouldn't be castigated for it, but people do tend to shy away from it because it's such a big, scary subject, and yet it's something that's going to affect their children and grandchildren if it's allowed to expand uncontrolled and unchecked in the way it has been allowed to in the past 30 or 40 years.
I've been looking at a lot of things that people have to say, and Tim, I think you just wrapped it up nicely. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the Red Fox Blogger. Enough said.
Oh, sorry about that, Kel.
It's great. It's great. You make this show so easy for me to do.
Well, I don't like to steal your thunder. I mean, you make a lot of very valid points, and what I do is I try to add value to those points. When I come onto the show, I try not just to repeat what you said. I try to think of other things that tie in with what you said, so that your listeners can say, oh, that's not only interesting in itself, but it takes me off down all these avenues that I can explore that perhaps I wouldn't have explored if it hadn't been for Tim talking to Kel in this manner. I like to think of myself as a catalyst, not somebody who steals your thunder. And I hope that's the way
you
I
did
come
not know. No, not at all. No, I always enjoy it when you can make it to the Red Fox Blogger, and I know my listeners really enjoy it when you're here as well. It seems that people's ears prick up just that much more when they hear such an opinion from somebody as learned as yourself. And of course, here in North America, we're really hungry for opinions across the pond here in North America, in Canada, in the United States. We're very, very eager to get the first-hand knowledge as to what the ramifications of Islam means in Europe. So North American listeners are very grateful to listen to people like yourself and to people like Jeff Mitchell of EDL Radio. We want to know the first-hand accounts of what's going on over there, because we see the threat of Islam here. We see what's happening in Europe, and there is a lot of unfortunate speculation over here that we fear that England might be gone within a decade or so, if not sooner.
Well, I think that, as Mark Twain once famously said, reports of our demise are greatly exaggerated. There's no question that there's a very real threat, and that threat is not being properly addressed by our political elites at the moment. That is certainly true. Mm. And, of course, a lot depends on how demographics are allowed to proceed in the years and decades to come. Because, as I've probably mentioned on your show, it was very well put by a professor called Dr. Peter Hammond, and he made a study of Islamic behavior in countries which depended very much on the percentage of Muslims in the host population. And he took I think, probably the top 100 countries that are affected by Islamic populations increasing in their countries, and he was able to demonstrate what happens when the percentages increase from 1%. They're seen as no more than a colourful example of ethnic diversity, adding to the wonderful, rich, multicultural rainbow fabric of the country. At 1%, that's absolutely fine. Nobody minds that sort of percentage of Muslims in a country at all. But once you get above about 1%, you start to see all sorts of worrying trends creeping in. You almost immediately start to notice when it gets to 2 or 3% that they're disproportionately more criminal and antisocial than the host population. And by the host population, I'm talking about including immigrants from virtually every other culture. The Muslims are notable by the fact that they demonstrate these characteristics. At 5%, you're going to get them pushing for things like halal, which you've already talked about with and when Mike Holt was last on your show, he elaborated
in quite an astounding manner the extent to which halal funds terrorism, and that starts when the Muslim population gets up to sort of 4 or 5%. Above that, you get to 10%, and you'll start to see discontent in the streets, not actual rioting, if Muslims don't get their own way. When you get up to 20%, like you do in some parts of France, you'll start to see nightly car burnings, and generally the formation of no-go areas where even the police do not want to enter without a military escort. And of course, when it gets to beyond 20%, then you have real civil strife problems. And he documented this and gave examples of different countries with different populations. And lo and behold, the correlation between the populations in those countries and the civil strife or civil discontent or the social problems that he'd been describing, there was almost 100% correlation. Yeah, I mean, the point I was getting back to was when you start to see the percentages rise, then, yes, you do get more and more problems. But I think England's got a long way to go yet. And one of the things I found most encouraging as a sign this week was a poll that was taken at the weekend. We have a Sunday morning politics show on the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. And excuse me. Sorry about this. I've got a phone going off in the background and I can't see that thing. Shut up, phone. It'll stop in a minute.
Anyway. I love that.
I've just had to throw it out the door. isn't technology a wonderful thing? Right, sorry about that. Getting back to what I was saying.
Yeah,
this poll on Sunday Morning Live, which was the name of the programme. There was a program which pitted two people against each other. Tommy Robinson was one, coincidentally, and a chap called Inayat Bunglawala, who is supposedly a moderate Muslim, was on the other side. And the host, who had a very strong anti-EDL bias, said, right, we're going to have a discussion and then we're going to take a poll. And it was along the lines of, should the EDL be given a platform to express their views? And what she was implying was that any right-thinking person should deny a racist, fascist, bigoted, Islamophobic outfit like the EDL any airtime at all. And her implication was that if we only have this discussion between Tommy Robinson and Inayat Bunglawala, everybody will be able to see exactly how racist, fascist, Islamophobic and bigoted people like Tommy Robinson, the EDL, actually are, and how modern, civilized people like Inayat Bunglawala and your average moderate Muslim, how moderate and civilized they are. But in fact, the argument actually turned round. During the course of the argument, I could see what was happening. Tommy Robinson, for all his faults and whatever he might have done in leaving the EDL and joining Quilliam, which I'm sure you'll touch on later in the program, for all his faults, he came across in a very, very clear, and I don't know if I dare use the word statesmanlike, but it was a very impressive performance. And by contrast, he came across in what I thought was a very statesmanlike way. And Inayat Bunglawala sounded like a petulant, peevish Muslim playing the victimhood card, pretending to be offended at what Tommy Robinson was saying. And he just sounded like whine, whine, bitch, bitch, I'm going to be the offended Muslim here, showing my sense of victimhood and my sense of outrage at every opportunity. And he just came across so badly that when they took the poll at the end of the programme, the support for EDL having a platform on which to express their views was 95% to 5% against. 95% in favour, and that's virtually unanimous.
That is so encouraging. That is wonderful. And especially on that program and the way, from what I am understanding is that that program is very anti-EDL. So on their own program, on their own network, to have 95% in support of EDL having a voice and a platform, that is very encouraging. And they must have egg on their face.
That's right. I mean, I was at pains to point out when I had an opportunity that to some people I was talking to later on the EDL Blog Talk Radio, I was at pains to point out that doesn't necessarily translate to 95% in support of the EDL. But the most important thing is everybody seems to be virtually unanimously, 95% is virtually unanimous, and the opinion is that everybody, or virtually everybody, is in favour of the EDL being able to stand up and tell the truth about Islam. Because the great thing about the EDL, some people love them, some people loathe them, but they do tell the truth about Islam. There's no reason for them to lie. If we are allowed, or if the EDL is allowed, to tell the truth about Islam, then every reasonable person of goodwill, by which I mean non-Muslims, okay, will see the truth. The truth will out, and the advance of the encroachment of Islam will be slowed immensely, if not come to a grinding halt altogether. That's all that is needed, is to be able to shed the light of truth on Islam. And once that happens and everybody sees Islam for what it really is, then I think we will see a very quick, well, maybe not very quick, but I think we'll see a reversal in the what everybody's been predicting as the decline of England, and the, you know, our in 10 years we'll all be walking around wearing burqas. I mean, I've got a nice pink one in the drawer just in case for me. but yeah, I mean,
your eyes.
Yeah, that's right. That's my eyes.
That's the only thing it'll bring out.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm terrible.
In all seriousness, I think people who predict the decline and demise of England are being a bit premature, because I see all the signs that are encouraging. And that poll, everybody who was involved with that program and in the program that followed it on Sunday morning, which was called Sunday Politics, it was touched on in that program as well. And people expressed surprise. People who expected, what they expected was that your average civilized English person would say, oh no, we can't possibly allow those racist, fascist, bigoted, Islamophobic EDL people to spout their vile nonsense in public. We're going to banish them beyond the pale to the outer fringes of society, and we're not going to have anything to do with them. That's what the BBC wanted to happen. And what we got was a complete reversal. And I'm not saying it was solely down to Tommy Robinson's performance against Inayat Bunglawalla, but it was a significant event. And I've been looking in vain in the pages of The Guardian and on the BBC News comments pages to see what they've got to say about it. And they all the left-wing publications seem to have gone very quiet about it. Now, if any of your listeners know of any comments or feedback as a result of that show and they want to put them into your chat room, I'd be very interested to hear of it. But I've actively been looking to see if the left-wing media have had a lot to say about it, and they've all been very quiet. And I think they were taken by surprise almost as much as I was.
I'm looking in... frog in my throat there. I'm looking in the chat room right now, and Poppy is saying that... she's not sure if there is a link. She said it's not available on BBC Player at this point. She tried to do it again later on, she said, and it's not there.
That is a very, very significant piece of information, because normally the BBC news channel, or the BBC as a whole, in case your listeners in the States don't know, recently opened up an archive-type feature whereby you could go to any program where up to seven days after it was broadcast, and you could watch it again. Now, the fact that you can't watch that particular program again says to me that they were taken by surprise to the extent that they just did not want that information getting out beyond whoever happened to be watching it on the Sunday morning live program, like me.
Yeah. This is so frustrating. See, this is why I like doing the radio show, and this is pretty much why I created the blog, the Red Fox Blogger, because things have a tendency to disappear. Mm-hmm. When I was doing the EDL special regarding Tommy Robinson and Kev Carroll, I played some sound clips. Fortunately, I got them in because they had a way of disappearing within the next couple of hours. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is interesting, and I'm sure it's not coincidence either. Mm-hmm. The British government are very keen to... I know for a fact from what David Cameron, our beloved Prime Minister, has said, he'd very much like to get rid of the EDL altogether. And my feeling is that the event that happened last week with Tommy Robinson were largely a result of pressure being applied, probably right from the very top of the British government.
And Poppy was looking, Kath was looking, and Kath found the YouTube link.
Okay.
And she put it in the chat room.
Thank you, Kath.
Wonderful.
That's great news. I can't actually get onto your chat room from where I am, Kel. I don't know why. It's something I've noticed in the last couple of shows I've been on. I can't see your chat room, but if you can forward me that link via email over the next day or so, I'd very much appreciate it. And I'd certainly say thanks to your listeners.
I certainly will.
Thanks to your listeners who put those links on there, because those links will be topics of discussion, I'm sure, in the weeks and months to come. I think it's the start of, they do say one swallow doesn't make a summer, but I think it's the start. It's a very, very encouraging start. The fact that so many people think that people who speak out against Islamization of our countries should be given a platform, that's a very, very significant thing.
You know what? I'm just encouraged that organizations like the English Defense League have so much support. Just getting back to what you were saying a few minutes earlier, in that you see a positive turn, you don't see the demise of England anytime soon, and it's because of organizations like English Defense League and the support of the general populace and their awakening and their knowledge as to what Islam is and what the caliphate is all about, what Islam is, their determination for a global caliphate. It's encouraging to me as a resident in North America to listen to people over there say, look, no, this is what's going on, and we are gaining ground back.
Yeah,
we have it under control.
Well, yeah, I'd say it's a way to go before we could say we've got it under control. But we're certainly laying the groundwork all the time. I mean, every time we have shows like this, and I can come on and I can talk to you, we enlighten, or at least I hope that's the effect. I hope your listeners would agree with me when I say we enlighten a few more people a little bit more and encourage them to go out and do a little bit more research themselves. I always say to people, don't take my word for it. If I say something on the show, please don't take my word for it. Go and look at the
subject. That's what I encourage.
No, There's no shortage of links to the topics that we talk about, and you will be able to make your own mind up, and I'm sure if you do the research diligently, you will come to the same conclusions that we do. And that's what I was saying earlier. We don't have to lie about it. We just have to bring the truth and the awareness to a critical mass of people. Once we have a critical mass, then we can start affecting the decisions that our political elites are making. At the moment, they're making decisions which they think are going to benefit them long term, which are against their country's interests, certainly in the West. And I think when mm-hmm. they see the writing on the wall and they see that those decisions are no longer going to be in their own interest because the population is now way too savvy, then I think we'll see change. But it's down to shows like ours. It's obviously down to people like the English Defence League who tap into a streak of concern that every reasonable person in this country has. And, of course, when I use the term every reasonable person, I'm referring to non-Muslims. I usually have to say that two or three times every show because I like to clarify who I'm speaking about when I say that. Because if you're Muslim and you're listening to this, well, if you were a reasonable person, Mr. Muslim, you would have discarded Islam and become an ex-Muslim, and then you would be no longer subject to our automatic disapproval. But until that time, Mr. Muslim, we can't classify you as a reasonable person of goodwill for so many reasons, and those reasons are discussed every week on shows like yours and mine.
You've got it right there, Tim. You just nailed it right there. This is what I, in my rather halting ways at times, try to convey, is that I'm sorry, but I have no respect for anybody who follows the dictates of the Quran. I've grown rather impatient with the Muslims in that they will not take control of the Islamists within it. They sit back, and I do not see any global protest against Sharia law. As a matter of fact, I was just peeking in the chat room, and Kath mentioned that there was. I'm just trying to scroll it up so I can get it back to me here. But there was a lady talking about some Muslimas who thought it was wrong for women to vote, and these are people who are living in the West. I don't have time for that. I don't have the patience for that. If this is their belief system, there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. It does not exist.
Well, I think you've got to really...
Why lie about it anymore, right?
Well, I think it's only fair to say that there are Muslims who don't take a great interest in what their religion tells them to do, and they try to live good lives in spite of their religion. Now, whether moderate Muslim is a good term to use for that person, I'm not sure. I think I would prefer to use the term Muslim in name only, a mino, which is something I have heard mentioned before.
I think
it's a better description, because there are plenty of people out there who were born and brought up Muslims and who don't feel sufficiently strongly about it one way or the other. They don't feel strongly enough to discard their Muslim identity, but they don't feel that they want or need to follow what their religion tells them to do. They try and live reasonably civilized lives, assimilating and integrating with us in the West as best they possibly can. And I think for Muslims in name only, they are people who we can perhaps do business with. But yeah, I mean, when you come to use the term moderate Muslim, which a lot of people would try and have us believe there is such a person, personally, I think such a thing exists in the same category as like unicorns and griffins, that mythical creatures that you never actually see. Everybody talks about, but you never actually see. I mean, I've met plenty of people who I would describe as Muslim in name only. As to whether they're practicing, of course, the big problem is you don't know if they're practicing taqiyya when they're talking to you. It's a huge disadvantage that Muslims have, even if with the best of intentions, even if you've got a Muslim in name only and he's trying his hardest to integrate and assimilate, because Islam itself allows for taqiyya and kitman, deception and dissimulation. You never know if you're going to be able to trust that guy when the chips are down.
If they're a Muslim in name only, they're still a Muslim, and I don't know how far I can trust them.
Well, no, and quite right too. I mean, I would have the greatest respect for somebody who was intellectually honest enough to say, I was born a Muslim, I was raised a Muslim, I then discovered the implications of Islam, and I left Islam, and now, although I was a Muslim, I'm not a Muslim anymore, I'm an ex-Muslim. Now, that person I would have more respect for, because they're being more intellectually honest. But people who say, well, I'm still keeping the baggage in the back of my head just in case I might need it at a future date, that's the person you can't trust, because as we see in Syria, we had Christians and Muslims living side by side for decades, and the Christians trusted as far as they would trust any neighbour until one day the Muslims were instructed by the local imam to rise up and slaughter the Christians, and after very little in the way of second thoughts, an awful lot of those Muslims did just that and slaughtered their Christian neighbours. Now, if they can do it there, they can do it here. And you're absolutely right not to have the trust that you would reserve for any other member of the human race.
Well, I'm just thinking, Muslim, I'm sorry, that's kind of sticking with me. But
okay.
The people I trust the most are the apostates. And there is actually a gentleman on Radio Jihad Network here. He's on Friday evenings, and his name is Dr. Mark Christian. He is an apostate. He embraced Christianity. He walked away from Islam. He knew that.
I think I know.
It could not, yeah. He knew that it was not going to end well. So he walked away from Islam. He embraced Christianity. Dr. Mark Christian, he has his radio program right here on Radio Jihad Network on Friday evenings, I believe, at 11 p.m. Eastern time. I have Vito Esposito, actually, in my chat room as well. He can put up the link for all the shows for Radio Jihad Network. But these are the ones I trust the most. The apostates,
if they have looked Islam in the face and said, despite everything I was brought up with, I have the moral courage to leave Islam and declare myself an ex-Muslim, you have to have admiration for those people, because it must be a very, very hard thing to do in the face of family pressure, peer pressure, and pressure from anybody else in the community who, you know, if they find out that's what you've done, depending on whereabouts in the world you live in a Muslim community, your life could be at risk. It's a very, very brave thing to be able to stand up and do that and declare it publicly.
And I found the link for Radio Jihad Network. The person of whom I am referring, Dr. Mark Christian, he and Corey Miller, they have their radio program on Radio Jihad Network Friday at 11 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, okay.
So I just wanted to let people know that. As a matter of fact, I'll put the link in the chat room for people too. Here we go.
Yeah, and if you
but
could,
you know what?
You could copy me in on that link on my Gmail at some point, Kel. That would be good too. As I say, I can't
get
to your
chat room. I have a lot of stuff to send you today.
Okay.
But you know what? We are so overdue for a break, and I want you to refresh your tea. But there's something I want to play, and this is especially for my American listeners. They're a little bit under siege right now because of Barack Hussein Obama, the usurper-in-chief, sitting there in their White House. But they've also been inundated with a lot of natural disasters of late. There was some hurricanes and going on down there as of late. A lot of devastation, a lot of people displaced, a lot of people very discouraged, not only in the physical state of which they are living right now when their houses are literally blown away, but they're living under the thumb of a government that has shut itself down. There are people wandering around like zombies going, what are we going to do next? I'm very, very close to my American cousins. I love my American cousins so very much. So when I see them in trouble, it breaks my heart and it makes me weep. But I have something here for you folks, and this is from Toots Sweet. He came out with this song just this week. It's called Keep Hope Alive, We Will Survive, and I'm going to play it for you. This is from Toots Sweet. This is his message to the American people. And when we come back, we have something from Tim. Tim has an address for you. But refresh your teas, and we'll see you guys back here in 3 minutes, okay? All right.
Yep.
Keep hope alive.
I know sometimes in life you feel that everything is lost, and that mountain is just too high to climb.
Keep hope alive.
Well, that's when you gotta dig deep down inside and reach that inner strength you never knew you had. Give you the will to carry on another day. And all the days go by and you're outside, still wondering why, watching everything you worked so hard in life all begins to fall apart. It breaks your heart to see it all crumbling at the wayside. You wanna lay your head down, pack it in and say goodbye, cause there's nothing left here to keep hope alive. Until you see the only two things in life that really matter. It's a little girl and a little boy. Once your foolish pride, once your beautiful joy. Even what's left of a candy bar when it's like the remains of a Chips Ahoy. Playing with a piece of driftwood that create a little mind made into a beautiful toy. And at that moment you realize you gotta rebuild everything Mother Nature had just destroyed. Their precious little heartbeats give you the strength of a thousand men. Gave you the will to get back up on your feet again. Because you knew right then this battle wasn't about you, it's all about them. And you reassured them like only a daddy can. And they knew right then that everything was gone off the floor. I can't say
welcome back, everybody, to the Red Fox Blogger. And to remind you, I'm your humble host, Kel Fritzy. Tim Burton is joining me today. We are discussing the issues of Islam, and Tim is going to share something with you in a minute. Before we get to that, though, I want to thank people who are joining me. I want to thank the people in my chat room. I want to thank Anne, British News, Kath, Drake's Drum, Poppy, Vito, Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. Vito Esposito has a show right here on the Radio Jihad Network tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Please join us in the chat room and share your opinions. I want to thank Sue from New Mexico, who is listening on the line. And, of course, I always want to thank my archive listeners, because you listen. I know you do. But with that, we are back in business, and Tim is joining me. And Tim, where do I begin with this? Where do you want to start with all this? I put the article in the chat room, and people are looking at it.
Okay.
I also downloaded the MP3.
Okay.
I think I'm going to play that. And
all right. I'll give you a short introduction then, Kel.
Yes, do please.
Yeah, it's a monologue that I recorded, and it's written in a style that was quite popular maybe 100 years ago, before we had radio and television and internet. There were limited ways in which you could transmit information about important political events, past and present, political intrigues, famous battles and so on. I know we had printing presses from about the 15th, 16th century onwards, but a lot of the time you had professional raconteurs, storytellers who would come around from village to village, and they would gather around a crowd about them in the evenings, and somebody would buy them a couple of jars of ale, pints of beer, and then they would tell their stories, and they would recount them in the form of monologues, and sometimes they were rhyming monologues, and they injected a little bit of humour and a little bit of poetic license into them to make it more interesting and more memorable. And the monologue that I've got for you this evening, that Kel has very kindly said she will play when I've just finished this introduction, it's in that spirit. So it describes an event that took place, as far as we know, around about 1400 years ago, to do with the flight of Muhammad from Mecca to Medina. And it's an interpretation which I hope you'll find, shall we say, interesting. I'm not presenting it as a historical lecture. It's a little bit tongue in cheek, but it's along the lines of you imagine me as a raconteur who might have come along a couple of hundred years ago and sat you all round a fire of an evening, and then I would tell this little story, and I'd tell it in a way that would make you think about what actually happened. And I'm not saying that it necessarily happened the way I describe it, but I'll let the story tell itself. If Kel would like to put it on, just say a couple of words before you put it on, Kel, and away you go.
And away we do go. Ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy this. I also put the link in the chat room so you can read it as well. This is priceless. Tim, thank you so much for this, and it is my pleasure to share it with my listeners. Here, guys, take a listen.
I'd like to read a monologue to you now. It commemorates a famous event in Islamic history, Al-Hijra, which, according to documents which have recently been discovered, may not have gone entirely according to plan. This is called Muhammad's Flight from Mecca to Medina. It was on the sand dunes of Mecca, the year 622. Muhammad was sitting in his tent and wondering what the heck he should do. He'd had a hard 13 years preaching. Some days he didn't want to get out of bed, because the townspeople, they just laughed at him and threw stones at the back of his head. They nicked his lunch when his back was turned, and filled his water bottle up with sand, and fed his camel with loads of Ex-Lax, till it were hardly able to stand. Now Muhammad were right pigged off with all this, and in the middle of night he decided to call all his men round and have a parley at first light. But his men were nowhere to be seen. They decamped by the light of the moon, and gone to Mecca to check out bingo and suck jars of ale in the saloon. As Muhammad watched on the horizon, the sun were coming up in morn. Back came his men, straggling in ones and twos, their clothes all tattered and torn. "We've just come back from bingo," said Abdul, "and we've had a reet terrible neat. Them Jews cheated us at snooker and nicked all our sandals, and we've had to come back in bare feet." "And bingo caller couldn't call numbers properly, 'cause he had frog in throat and were feeling bad. So Rashid here cut off his head with a scimitar, and that's when townspeople got mad. They chased us out of Mecca Bingo Hall and reet up to the top of High Street. We had to hide round back of fish and chip shop, else happen we'd all be dead meat." Muhammad said, "Look, lads, we all need a holiday. I've been putting some money aside. Medina's quite nice, and they've got loads of fit women. Come on, saddle up, and let's ride." But suddenly, he had a revelation. An angel Gabriel he did appear, saying, "Nay, lad, Allah says, get thee to Blackpool. It's quite nice at this time of year." So Muhammad said, "Reet, lads, change of plan. As you know, our Allah knows best. So we're headed for Blackpool, the tower and the donkey rides, the fun fair and all of the rest." So off they all set for Blackpool, and it were not long before they were in fix. 150 of them on camels, stuck in the slow lane of M6. They called Finn for breakfast at Charnock Richard, and Muhammad said, "Well, bugger me, it's 10 quid, lads, for a plate of egg and chips, and another 5 quid for us tea." But onwards they went towards Blackpool, through rain, snow and slush without fear, till they came to a doormat in snow that said, "Bug off." And Muhammad said, "Hey up, lads, we're here." But there were a note stuck on gates of Blackpool, which Muhammad read with a groan. It said, "We heard as how you was coming, so we buggered off, there's no one at home." At that Muhammad got proper blazing, but Blackpool were blazing also, for someone had left chip pan on gas ring, and Blackpool were all aglow. Rashid suggested they go up the tower, as that were not yet aflame, but Muhammad said he had no head for heights, but thanks very much all the same. So they trudged along beach for a while in smoke, and paddled in water, saying, "Isn't it cold for time of year?" And had a free ride on the donkeys, and stole all sticks of rock from shop on pier. Feeling brave, Rashid went on Big Dipper at funfair, but he had a weak stomach and felt sick. Then he chucked it all over Muhammad, who said, "That's my last clean change of clothes, you idiot." By then Blackpool had burnt down to ashes, so Muhammad said, "Time to retreat." And by then they was all freezing their nuts off anyway, and no one had got out to eat. The camels were complaining like buggery, 'cause they were weary, smelly and old, and they were asking for blankets and time and a half, and boots for working in cold. Retreating were worst part of business. They got lost on way out at Blackpool without map, and the camels had got fed up and run off with donkeys. And Abdul said, "Bugger this, Muhammad, it's crap." Over the Pennines they went in snow, dischuffed to their knickers they were, till they got to Great Yarmouth and nicked an old fishing boat and set sail for Arabia. They eventually got back to Medina, and all they had left between them were 5 bob. And Muhammad said, "Next time I see that angel Gabriel, I'll smash him right in gob, telling us to go all the way to Blackpool, when Medina is much nicer by far, and it were only 3 days from Mecca, or two if we travelled by car. But you know what they say, lads, when all's said and done. We all know that Allah knows best. He somehow knew we needed that holiday in Blackpool, but next year, we'll give it a rest. Thank you.
There you go.
I love the applause at the end. Very good.
I also put in a list of translations for people. So I love colloquialisms. Sup is drink.
Yeah.
Reet is right. Neat is night. Skimper, a large curved sword of Arab origin. I love it.
Well, one of the things that I thought is a lot of people don't even realize the significance of Mecca Bingo. And I even had to think about what I was going to put concerning that. And I'm not sure if that actually made it into the revision of the glossary I sent you. But bingo is a game that's played over here in a community hall. It involves people with a card, each have a card with numbers on it. And there's a bingo caller that reads out numbers at random. And the first person that fills up their card and ticks off all the numbers is the winner. And that's called bingo, and it's very popular. And over here, the company that runs the bingo hall is called Mecca, and hence Mecca Bingo. And that's the significance when I refer to Mecca Bingo at the start of the monologue. If anybody's thinking, what's bingo and what's it got to do with Mecca? I only realised at a late stage that you might not know, so I did actually put that into the glossary, but it may not have made it onto Kel's page yet. So that's all you need to know, really, in addition to what I put on there.
We'll get it in there. And Drake's drum, he wants me to let you know that he was born in Blackpool.
Ah, well, okay. Well, he obviously knows what I'm talking about then. Good.
Oh, yes. The article is being well received.
Okay, good. I was just thinking there's probably a lot of similar episodes in Muhammad's life which could maybe merit the same treatment, and I'm open to suggestions if anybody is interested enough to send a couple of ideas through. Cal will no doubt forward them to me, so I'd be very interested.
Always my pleasure to do so. And ladies and gentlemen, please, you can always get in touch with me. You can always get in touch with Tim. Scroll up to the show notes, and Tim's links are right there, right below the picture slides. Tim's links are there. My links are there. You can get in touch with both of us, either Twitter or on our respective blogs. But do get in touch. Tim and I, we're always looking for new voices, new ideas, new opinions, and new approaches. Right, Tim?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, that particular idea for the monologue came to me about 3 o'clock one morning earlier last week. And I just came out of nowhere. I couldn't say to you that I'd spent an enormous amount of time putting it together, because it wouldn't be true. I just woke up and there it was in my head, and I thought, I'll have to get this down on paper. And when I'd got it down, I thought, I wonder if Kel will be interested in this.
It's the sort of thing that you could
take to any event in the past, and you could give it the same treatment. So I'd be happy to explore doing that.
Oh, I just love doing that. And oh no, Tim. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Oh, Tim, hang on.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, hang on, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, hang on. Hold on. Uh-oh, what do we have here?
What's happening?
Ladies and gentlemen, 50 years ago today, the Red Fox was born. She was unleashed upon the planet. 50 years ago today, my mother went, I give to you the greatest gift of all, and that is your little Red Fox. That is Kel. That's me. Today is my birthday. And I want to thank everybody for all the birthday greetings and all the well wishes. And I'm going to kill one of my girlfriends who gave me a T-shirt that said, 50, I demand a recount. So,
well,
there you
happy,
go.
Happy birthday to you, Kel. So, birthday wishes
Thank
from
you,
over
Tim.
This side of the pond.
Oh, I've Thank only you. Been putting it in the chat rooms for like 2 weeks. And every time I go into the chat rooms, I say, oh, don't forget, get your shopping done for by October 14th. It's my birthday. And I always guide people to infidels are you. Are you with an R with a U? Infidels are you, and get your paraphernalia there and send it to me. Hurry up, get in there. Shopping days, 10 shopping days left till Kel's birthday. Five, Tim. I'm shameless.
Well, if you don't ask, you don't get, as my mother always used to say. So, yeah, quite right too. Now, it's just a shame I haven't been able to get onto your chat room. Otherwise, I would have realised it and I would have gone out and I would have got something specially for you. I probably would have got you a T-shirt and put one of my special infidel logos
yeah.
in there for you.
Oh, you make the best logos, yeah.
I've got one design, which I'll describe it for your listeners if you like. It features a poppy, a Remembrance Day poppy, one of the sorts of poppies that Muslims are very fond of burning on November the 11th. And this T-shirt design is a poppy, and basically it says, "If this poppy offends you," at the top, and then underneath it says, "Please feel free to pack your bags and get the FCUK out of my country." And that's quite a popular design. I've seen one or two people wearing that around here on the run-up to Remembrance Day, which is November the 11th every year over here, because people do not like Muslims burning our poppies, because the poppy has a great...
Yeah. Well, we tend to take umbrage with that, Mozzies, so please don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. That's it. Listen to Red Fox and don't do it.
I am the infidel that their imam warned about. I'm serious about that. Don't, for goodness sake. I am so glad that my mama... I'm glad my mama didn't have a headache one night. Otherwise... I think the world would be a little more boring without me in it, and me being the huge pain in the you know what. I create havoc wherever I go. Hey Tim, as a matter of fact, my American friends, God bless them. My friend Pam, she sent me this joke. I don't know who wrote it, but I think it was somebody in the United States, and she sent this to me, and I'm going to read it to you. Let's have a little bit of levity. Let's have a little bit of fun. I love this. This is from my friend Pam, and she sent this. A big earthquake with the strength of 8.1 on the Richter scale hit the Middle East. 2 million Muslims died, and over 1 million were injured. Iraq and Iran are totally ruined. The governments don't know where to start with providing help to rebuild. The rest of the world is in shock. The USA is sending troops to help. Saudi Arabia is sending oil. Latin America countries are sending supplies. New Zealand is sending sheep, cattle, and food crops. The Asian continent, they are all sending labor to assist in rebuilding the infrastructure. Great Britain is sending medical teams and supplies. Canada, not to be outdone, is sending 2 million replacement Muslims. Damn, those Canadians are smart.
Very good.
I just wanted to share that. I thought that was brilliant. So thank you, Pam, for sending that to me. But, wow, we are down to our last 20 minutes here.
Oh, wow. Doesn't the time fly?
It's gone by like you wouldn't believe. Where does the time go, Tim? It seems, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, when Tim and I get into a conversation, the whole world seems to just melt away, and we can talk forever. This is the beauty of not only Blog Talk Radio and citizen journalism. It's also about making friends and making connections and sharing our ideas globally. It is always a pleasure, Tim, to have you on the Red Fox Blogger, and I know the listeners just so totally enjoy it when you are here. You, You're quite a busy man. You are also a panelist over there at EDL Radio. So, wow.
Yes,
where do you
yes,
find
indeed.
The time?
Well, indeed. I mean, when I first, in fact, I have to say, it's all down to you, Kel, for introducing me to EDL in the first place. If it hadn't been for you, I never would have got the introduction to appear on their show. So thank you very much for that, Kel. I've got you to thank for that. I'm on there Thursday, Friday and Sundays now at 8:30, 20:30 GMT. So where's that in relation? We're about 5 hours ahead of you, aren't we,
mm-hmm.
aren't we, Kel? So
yeah, that's 3:30 p.m. Eastern
yeah.
time.
So if any of your listeners have got some time to spare on those days, Thursday, Friday and Sunday, you'll find me over there. And hopefully we'll keep you as entertained over there as we are over here. And I do hope we are entertaining you over here. I like to think we are. We've got no end of subjects to discuss. I mean, I've got a whole list of things which I write down in advance of every show that we could talk about. And we just see which way the conversation goes. It's all ad hoc. I mean, the one thing I was talking about to somebody about Blog Talk Radio, they didn't really understand the concept of Blog Talk Radio, and they said, well, is it like, you know, being on a BBC documentary? And I said, it's nothing like being on a BBC documentary.
Goodness.
No, because obviously with radio documentaries that are run by the mainstream media, it's very formal, very scripted. Everybody knows what's going to be said in advance and there aren't any surprises. But with Blog Talk Radio, it's completely unscripted, and anybody tuning in might think, well, isn't that going to be a bit unprofessional? And it's true. It's never going to be as polished and as professional as
well,
a BBC
documentary. Well, that's the whole point.
But that
yeah,
is the point,
yeah, that's the whole
as
point behind Blog
yeah.
Talk Radio. We are citizen journalists. We're not
yeah.
polished, bubble-headed beach blondes, you know, sitting behind a desk and reading a teleprompter. No, this is the real deal, ladies and gentlemen. You have to listen to Blog Talk Radio 24/7 because it's citizen journalism and it's people who have something to share, people who have something to say. And a lot of stuff that you hear on Blog Talk Radio, you will not get in the mainstream media. And Blog Talk Radio, bless them, they have all sorts of categories for you to enjoy, everything from cooking shows to pet shows to politics to religion to everything. You go to Blog Talk Radio and just click on a category, and there's like 900 shows right there, 900 citizen journalist hosts right there for you. So please get away from the BBC. Get off that stuff. Get away from CBC. Get away from NBC. Get away from all that. You're not getting the real news. You're getting the real news right here. Oh, my goodness. Everybody's
yeah,
going to think that Block Talk Radio is paying me.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I can see the it's spiking up here on the statistics, even as I'm looking at them with that speech there. But, I mean, Kelly's quite right, and it's particularly true with politics, and it's particularly true with right-wing politics. Well, I say right-wing, politics as espoused by reasonable people on the centre ground, which is what people on the left tend to say is right-wing. I don't see myself as right-wing at all, and I imagine a lot of the listeners out there, they don't see themselves like that at all. They see themselves as reasonable people who like to be kept informed. And, of course, if it were down to the left-wing media, we never would be kept informed. And Blog Talk Radio is good from that point of view, specifically for politics where the interests of conservatives like ourselves can be freely discussed, because it's largely suppressed in the mainstream media, because the mainstream media is largely controlled by people on the left who have no interest in promoting anything that the conservatives like us have to say. So, yeah, listen
mm-hmm.
to Blog Talk Radio as much as you can, and you'll get a much clearer, much more truthful picture of what is going on than you would if you listened only to the mainstream media. And, of course, up until 5 years ago, we never had, well, when did Blog Talk Radio first become a popular thing,
Kel? It was created about 5 years ago, Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I mean, before that.
And the person, yeah, before that, we didn't have anything, really.
Yeah,
we didn't have anything. Blog Talk Radio, I mean, for all its glitches, and it does have tech issues. However, Blog Talk Radio is the biggest venue out there. A lot of people say that I would like to leave BTR because I don't like the mono. I want something with a little more stereophonic behind it, and a lot of people like that with a speaker. But Blog Talk Radio has an excellent interface. It has the chat rooms. The studio is very user-friendly. It's very, very easy to navigate yourself around Blog Talk Radio. All you need is a telephone or a Skype account and off and running. There you go. Speak your mind. Say what you want to share. Tim, I have to share something with the listeners right now, in fact. There are more and more people being inspired out there to become part of the radio team, as it were. The people who, oops, I just brought up the wrong thingy here. But there's a lot of people out there who are very excited about being part of not only Blog Talk Radio, but being part of the scene and getting the word out there. And the latest one who is going to be joining us on Blog Talk Radio is Findalis, and that is Katie. Findalis, as we know, is her blog is Monkey in the Middle. Katie will be debuting her very own radio show in Politics Conservative at the end of October. I'm going to put the link for Katie's show in my show notes after I finish taping, but it is fantastic for me
that sounds
brilliant, because there are first of all, Katie is a wonderful friend, but second of all, she is another female voice. I get a lot of people saying, I am so glad that there are women out there, conservative women on the airwaves talking about the issues. They're very excited to hear we are the fairer sex, so we're not delicate. No, we're very vocal. So
I'm
it's
sure
nice
I couldn't
to have
possibly
another
comment.
Lady. I love hearing the opinions of another female voice is going to be joining us here on Blog Talk Radio. It's great.
Yeah, it's excellent news. And the more people that get involved, the better. And I wish her well. Good luck to you, Katie. I'm looking forward to hearing you, and I'm certainly going to take a look at your blog once this radio show's over this evening. So good luck to you, and I hope everything works out really well for you. I'm sure it will. If you're a friend of Kel's, you're a friend of mine. So let's bring it on, and I'm sure you can show people a thing or two with your perspective, so I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And just before we wrap up, because we are down to 12 minutes and I have to play us out, but Poppy just posted in the chat room here, Tim, that there is apparently a Boston councillor who has announced that he is the new leader of the English Defense League, and his name is Elliot Fountain. And he's previously an English Democrat councillor in Fenside. And he tweeted, proud to be the new leader of the EDL on national news tomorrow to make announcement. So we'll have to sit around and, we'll have to keep our ears perked up and look for that.
Yes, indeed. There was a lot of speculation. Well, yes, there was a lot of speculation last week. And Tommy English, who I know you have a great deal of affection for, he even tongue in cheek, he said, "How about you, Tim?" He says, "You know, you'd make a good leader of the ETL." And I said, "Well, I'm sure there are going to be a lot more people better qualified than me for that sort of job." But I'm looking forward to hearing more about this guy. It isn't a name that I know. But I'm sure he's going to be known a lot more to a lot more people after that announcement's made tomorrow. People are going to be looking at him with great interest.
I was just told that don't say a whole lot about it because it's unverified. But it is it's unverified, but it's in the Boston Standard. So I don't know.
Well, okay. We'll
have to wait and see.
So if it's hit the public domain, even if it's in the Boston Standard, I mean, I don't know much about the Boston Standard.
I imagine, like
a small local newspaper, presumably. But nevertheless, if it's in the public domain, I'm sure it's perfectly all right for you to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing more about this guy and where he stands and what his plans are. I suppose we'd better not speculate too much more.
Yeah.
But,
and believe me, if there's any further developments, you know that Tim and I are going to be on top of it, and Tim and I will be going back and forth together as per our usual get together and tee up for the Red Fox blogger. Tim and I go back and forth over notes and over articles. And Tim, what do you think about this? And hey, Kel, what do you think about this? So we will certainly be in touch together and looking into this one. I know that Tim will definitely want to have the ducks in the row for the EDL radio for Thursday. Right, Tim?
Yes, I certainly will. I'll see what appears in the press tomorrow and perhaps have a word with one or two of my EDL contacts, see if I can find out a bit more. And if there's anything that's scheduled for release, I'll let you know about it. And then if you can let your listeners know at the next opportunity. I imagine that by the time the Thursday EDL radio program comes round, we'll all know a lot more. But in the meantime, Kel, if I get to hear anything, I'll email you directly. And conversely, if you get any links that relate to that, please let me know too.
I absolutely will do so. But we are out of time.
It's amazing,
hey,
isn't
Tim.
It? It seems like only a moment ago that we got started on this. And there's so much more I was going to bring in. I wanted to talk about the events this week in Spain with the escalating mosque wars in Spain. Maybe we leave that for another time if you're getting close to your closing down time. Suffice it to say that Muslims have been up to their normal intimidatory tactics when it comes to having mosques built for them in Spain. There's a good article in, is it Front Page? I don't know if it's Front Page May. But if you Google the escalating mosque wars in Spain.
Yeah, I got somebody sent me a link from they sent me this link last night, in fact, from Right Side News, and it's Spain's
Right Side
escalating
News.
Mosque wars.
Yes,
yeah.
That's the one.
Oh, that is something I will definitely want to explore with you down the road. I'm just going to put the link in the chat room for the folks.
Okay.
Definitely want to explore that one further. As a matter of fact, that would probably be a really good theme for next week or the week after that. Whenever you can get back to the Red Fox blogger, we can definitely make that one of our focal points.
I'm at your disposal, Kel. Anytime that you would like to have me back on, I would be honoured to come and talk with you again. So whenever you think that it's appropriate, I'd love to do that.
Oh, Tim, I so much appreciate that. I want you to have a wonderful week, and I will see you Thursday at EDL Radio for sure.
You certainly will.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Tim Burton, I can't convey enough how pleased I am. I was listening to the United States Defense League radio show with Gerard Winter about maybe 7 weeks ago. I was listening to this person. Who is this man? And I was typing madly in the chat room, asking questions. Who is this guy? What's he think of this?
Who is this? Goddamn limey. Goddamn limey.
Oh, he's got a Twitter account. So, yeah. So, me being that little, tiny pod digger, I dug, and I badgered Tim, I said, please come on the Red Fox Blogger. And, well, the rest is history. Tim, it is always such a pleasure to have you here on the Red Fox Blogger, and I know the listeners enjoy you so very much.
Pleasure's all mine, Kel. Pleasure's all mine.
There you go.
I'm looking forward to the next opportunity. I'll certainly be tuning in every week. Yes, if we've got specific things that you'd like to develop in terms of subjects that we can research together, then, that would be absolutely great. I'd love to do that.
Oh, thanks, Tim. And just to let the listeners know, I tape Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, as you know, but I also tape a show on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's 12 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. It's a little late for the folks across the pond, but another beauty of Blog Talk Radio is archive listen. But just to let you know, on Friday, I will be interviewing Montgomery J. Granger. He is Major Granger. He wrote a book called Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay. He was one of those who were tasked with taking care of the detainees, as they are referred. I personally, they're terrorists who were caught. But they were his charges at Guantanamo Bay. So he wrote this fantastic book, Saving Grace at Guantanamo Bay, Montgomery J. Granger. He will be my guest this Friday evening, so please try to be here for that. Tim, I want to thank you so very much.
Well, thank you, Kel. It's been a pleasure to have been on this show with you tonight, and I hope your listeners liked that little monologue, and if I have any more revelations in the middle of the night and I can jot them down, you never know, I might come back and treat you to another one sometime soon.
Thank you. I loved it. Thanks, Tim. I'll be talking with you throughout the week.
Okay, excellent. I'll look forward to it.
Okay. Have a great week. And I want to thank everybody who listens to my program. It means the world to me that you do. I sometimes bat my head around and I feel like I'm hitting a brick wall some nights, but you know what? You guys let me know that I'm making a difference. I am just one more voice out there fighting the scourge. And in the spirit of Mike Holt in that article I related at the beginning of the program, the scourge, capital T, capital S, that is the only capitals in terms of salutation they will get from the Red Fox Blogger henceforth as well. Have yourselves a wonderful week. I will see you back here on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Love you all, and remember, it's mass Islamity. Stop the insanity. Good afternoon, everyone.
Okay.
And for my archive listeners, a little treat. And, well, it's Thanksgiving in Canada. I am grateful for all of you out there. I want you to have a wonderful long weekend here in Canada. I want to thank everybody globally, and I want everybody globally to have a blessed day, a blessed week, and a blessed life. I have a little treat for you here.
Dog goes woof, cat goes meow, bird goes tweet, and mouse goes squeak. Cow goes moo, frog goes crow, and the elephant goes toot. Ducks they quack, and fish go blub, and the seal goes ow, ow, ow. But there's one sound that no one knows. What does the fox say? Big blue eyes, pointy nose, chasing mice and digging holes. Tiny paws up the hill, suddenly you're standing still. Your fur is red, so beautiful, like an angel in disguise. But if you meet a friendly horse, will you communicate by Morse? Morse, Morse. How will you speak to that? Oh, 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 oh.